Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of Forum GovTech Europe, the podcast that fosters the debate on the relationship between government and technology in Europe and beyond. I'm your host Simon, and today we're talking to Cristina Martinez Pinto, the founder and CEO of the PIT Policy Lab. Cristina is working at the intersection of agile policymaking and public interest technology. She holds a BA in International Affairs from the Technological University of Monterrey in Mexico and a Master in Public Policy from the Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. She wrote a master thesis about open government partnerships and mobile phone markets. In the past, Cristina has worked for the Mexican Foreign Affairs Ministry, as analyst for Georgetown University, as consultant for the World Bank in the area of digital development, and C-Minds, a think tank based in Mexico City, where she was leading the AI for Good lab. We talked about GovTech and startups in Mexico and Latin America in general, as well as the Biden administration's tech policy ambition and the regulation of emerging technologies. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. And now, without further ado, my conversation with Cristina. Hello, Cristina. Thank you very much for being here with us today. You are the founder of the PIT Policy Lab and you refer to yourself as a public interest technologist. Could you give us some insight into your background and how you became to where you are today?
Hi, Simon. Thank you for allowing me to share some insights with your audience on this very interesting topic. Well, about my background, I'm a bachelor in international affairs. I have a master's in public policy with a focus on technology policy. But I think what's very unique about someone with a background in social science is that I have many interests that converge. I consider myself a generalist. Something very interesting that happened to me, I come from the public sector. I worked at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs back in 2012. In leading the youth and gender immigration agenda. And while I was studying my master's at Georgetown University, there was this day when, back in 2015, when I came across the work of the Beck Center for Social Impact and Innovation, and they had this initiative called Data for Social Good. And I never seen the field, I didn't know at that time the field of civic technology. I didn't know there was a community of practice and that there were some academics and practitioners putting their technology skills into serving the public good. So it fascinated me. I became engaged immediately with this community. And then they also had a very bold project that aimed to institutionalize innovation in federal policymaking. So to me, this was like a way of learning how these tools were being applied to policymaking in the US, and then thinking, how could I bring back this knowledge to Mexico and to Latin America? So basically, I saw this clear intersection between my own skills, my own interests, as I said, converged into many applications and many topics: immigration, gender, youth, climate change, and so on. And it just felt like a professional goal and a realization that my skills had a very specific application.
Wonderful. And what fascinates you most about the intersection between government and technology, and where do you see its greatest potential?
I think what fascinates me the most are the possibilities. We can think, or we can realize, that there are so many challenges, and we can come back to methodologies and frameworks from a policymaking perspective, but then leverage new technologies to actually bridge gaps. And what I really like about public interest technology is that it has this focus on public impact. So it draws from different disciplines and it learns about best practices, but then it informs recommendations, action plans, blueprints, so governments can understand these tools can build capacity within their teams and then can enable, as I said, this kind of methodologies to form, to come up with policy plans, but to respond to these shared challenges with context in mind. And I mean with context in mind because I think even though we can learn a lot of practices from European countries or the United States, I think context matters. And I think it is very important from a Latin American perspective to create our own narrative and to understand our own challenges. And so we can learn from all these international examples, but we can also give back to the community by working on our own proofs of concept and then helping set the tone for international conversations. So we then not become only consumers of technology, but developers and creators of it.
Okay, very interesting. And what is your definition of GovTech, or also where do you see the main players or main within the ecosystem? What is like what makes up GovTech basically for you?
For me, as I said, well, public interest technology is where the worlds of different disciplines converge. And GovTech specifically for me refers to governments and startups working together to solve social challenges. But what I mean, why do I place the focus on governments and startups? Because I think that government face many have already, I mean, each government define their policy priorities based on the challenges they face or that they prioritize in a government agenda. And then there's a local ecosystem of startups that can help solve these problems. But what happens is that usually procurement rules to buy technology are very strict and leave out of the competition these kind of startups. So to me, what GovTech does is to create an enabling environment to change the rules of the game. So basically, startups and governments can work together into solving this project, but from a technology development perspective.
Okay. And how do you see the situation right now in Mexico? Like, do you think there's still a lot of work ahead of you, or you think that there's an ecosystem building? How's the situation over there?
I think we're going through a very interesting moment, and it's something that's happening in the world with the pandemic. We are seeing a trend of digital acceleration that's driven mainly by the pandemic. What we're seeing is that governments are also responding with the tools they have in hand. Some governments are doing it very effectively because they already had install capacities, they already had skills, they already had an understanding of digital leadership and why it matters. But in the case of Mexico, I believe we are in the right track, as in there is a GovTech ecosystem. Actually, something very interesting that I see happening last year is this GovTech. There was this report, this GovTech index created by CAF, a development bank, together with OECD, a startup. And I think it shed light on the importance of working on the enabling environment and ecosystem. And I see a trend of developing GovTech labs, which is having momentum in Latin America. And I think that it will start to make sense and be adopted by local governments in Mexico. So we're very excited about being part of this conversation about helping understand why it matters, why a GovTech lab can actually set a framework for the different actors of the ecosystem, including decision makers and policy makers and local startups, so they can find a common ground to build these technology solutions.
Okay, very interesting. And maybe shifting the focus a bit to Latin America in general, where do you see the strongest countries or strongest GovTech ecosystems within Latin America right now, and where do you see more potential?
I think the strongest countries in the GovTech ecosystem, civic technology, public interest technology, are definitely, well, Uruguay has been a country that is leading the scene, the tech scene, I think, from a policy perspective, but also from how do you create this enabling environment where all the pieces come together. So definitely Uruguay is a country that we are looking as a role model, but it's also, as I said, context matters, and it's important to realize that Uruguay is a very, very small country, so it's almost like its own proof of concept. But then you also have Colombia, which is doing fascinating things. It's working really closely with international development banks, with the World Economic Forum, and I think it's becoming an innovation powerhouse, and it's definitely accelerating startups and exploring these GovTech trends. I think Brazil is also Brazil has very strong presence on research and development. So I think it's also turning into this new model of GovTech labs to discuss or just like to come up with new ideas for increasing government and people's participation. So I definitely think these countries are leading the tech scene. Mexico has a strong ecosystem, and we can see it in different like phases. There's an AI ecosystem, there's like a civic technology ecosystem. People, I think, have different labels for what they do, but in the end, I think the common ground is that we're trying to solve problems in line with the SDG agenda. We're trying to build capacity, we're trying to bring new opportunities, and we're trying to align this vision that we have as a community of practice to actually like work in line with these ideas from the administration that have a very social focus. So it's about austerity, it's about fighting corruption, it's about diminishing inequality gaps, and we definitely think that technology can play a really big part of it. Technology, like traditional digital technology platforms, but new technologies as well.
Definitely. So now coming back a bit to you and your career, you were working at Siemens as director for the AI Good Lab. Could you tell us a bit about your work there, what it entailed, and what you were doing?
Yes, definitely. For the past 3 years, I was working with this amazing woman-led organization, Siemens. It's a think and do tank. It's a Mexican NGO. And what we were doing is basically having this, trying to answer these very existential questions. And I say existential because they speak to the core of who we are. How do we harness the power of collaboration? What does it mean to be a human in the age of algorithms? How can we amplify the voices of the global south? So we've had these guiding questions, and then we had very specific actions to answer them through a variety of projects. But I was leading the AI for Good policy lab. And from there, we had several projects in collaboration with international development. For example, with the International Development Bank, with the creation of FERLAC and FERLAC Jalisco, which is a platform to explore why responsible AI matters and how does it look like. And when we talk about standards, when we talk about use cases, then we can have specific conversation around proofs of concept that are being developed within this FERLAC platform. For example, we work closely with Microsoft in a binational project. It had a focus on US-Mexico relations. And basically, this Borderplex region, what we did there was to deep dive into understanding the uniqueness of the region, and then how can and like a proposal, a blueprint of recommendations of how AI can be harnessed to bring investment to Ciudad Juárez, to Las Cruces, and to El Paso, the cities that conform this region. Something fascinating that we worked at the AI for Good Policy Lab with the whole Siemens team is from the beginning, and I mean the beginning back in 2018 when we first launched a report about developing a national AI agenda, is that we realized that there were a lot of professionals working on artificial intelligence, but they didn't necessarily have this label. When I said many people have many labels, they didn't see themselves as part of the AI ecosystem, AI Mexican ecosystem. So what we started, we co-created a movement, a citizen-led coalition called AI 2030, IA 2030, which is a movement that is aligned to the SDG agenda and that seeks to create this umbrella for all the initiatives that are going throughout the country that have in common the use and exploration of the development and implementation of artificial intelligence. And it's been quite a ride. Actually, we just had like this transition of leadership because C-Minds was the general coordinator of this initiative from 2018 to 2020. So this year we had the I don't know if you say the change of batons, like we passed on the baton to the next organization that will be leading the coalition. But it's fascinating to look back because what started as a group of people interested in developing projects and on working on developing this idea of an agenda, and actually first we had a survey, a national AI survey, which had about 1,000 participation. So it was very interesting and the insights are public. And then we had a whole process of institutionalization of the coalition. And then another whole process of developing this national AI agenda. So we had 6 working groups, more than 400 people working within these groups. And it was a very novel methodology because what we've seen is that usually countries, the way they build or that they publish their national AI agendas, an increasing trend. Back in 2018, there were less than 10 countries that had published an agenda. And right now we have more than 50. But so what we see is that usually governments set up this group of experts. And sometimes, not in all cases, these experts organize roundtables or are open to peer review. So they develop these agendas, and then the agendas go from like up to bottom. So our thinking was that maybe we could do something different in Mexico, and what we could do is to crowdsource people intelligence. And basically to open, like using open tools to call for people interested in participating in the development of this agenda to work in that working group. And from there, start building the recommendations and building the document. And it was a very interesting exercise because we had representation from across all sectors. And we had co-facilitators, organizations, leaders in each of the themes explored in these 6 working groups: ethics, governance, cybersecurity, research and development, and so on. So we had these organizations that are leads in this field. And they were setting the tone, they were setting the proposal, they were responsible for developing their own sections with their own voices, but there was coherence across the whole document, the same questions of the partner, the same parts of the document, so it's easier to follow through. So what happened in the end last year is that we published this document. It's a fascinating process. there's a summary, like an executive summary of the agenda in English and in Spanish, if anyone is interested on reading it. And what's coming next is that now that we're transitioning to this new organization that is going to lead IA2030MX, the coalition, it's going to be now their turn to propose to the community of practice how are we going to follow through these milestones that we have already reached. And also understanding that, well, there was no pandemic when we started this process. It was just starting when we presented the result. It was kind of at the beginning. And I think it's been a game changer. So it's also make us think as a group of people with common interests, where does the focus have to be? And there's no necessarily like an answer that we have agreed upon. I think it's something we're exploring. And probably the focus of the coalition this year is going to be around capacity building, around economic recovery. We are in the middle of deciding it.
Okay, that's fascinating. But very interesting journey. And you are the founder and CEO of the PIT Policy Lab. Could you give us some insight into your journey of creating this organization and what its main purpose is?
Yeah, of course. Well, I think timing was key. 2020 personally was a big year, not only because of the pandemic, which I think was a big year for everyone, but because I became a mom for the first time. And of course, I had to discover and develop these new parenting skills. But in parallel, I was thinking like, well, what's my next big thing? Like, I am working on this fascinating project, and now I'm a mom, and now what's next? So I had a few brainstorming sessions with Constanza Gomez-Mont, the founder of T-Minds. And we were discussing about, well, like what happened? What's going on with the pandemic and how are governments responding to it? And from my expertise in policymaking, what we realized is that there was and there is a need of a deepened understanding from decision makers from across sectors on how to harness digital technologies, not only new technologies like AI, but actually how to understand digital transformation in favor of the public, in favor of social good. So basically, the PIT Policy Lab is C-Minds for spin-out. And is working on understanding how enabling technologies, not only artificial intelligence, but also cloud, 5G, Internet of Things, cybersecurity, virtual reality, augmented reality, how they come into play and how they enable the fourth industrial revolution and how these conversations need to be very contextual and need to understand the challenges and the departure point that each government faces. For example, I recently helped, not directly as a judge, but into analyzing some entries from a contest of digital solutions to respond to the COVID pandemic. And something that fascinated me is that, for example, you had an initiative by Taichung, by a city in Taiwan, which was amazing, that it offered an interconnect, like a very holistic framework on how these different technologies come into play, and 5G allows for speed, and that allows for and cloud allows for storage, and IoT creates the data, and artificial intelligence can help analyze this data in big quantities. So what was really interesting is that you had like this amazingly advanced proposal, and then you also had a proposal for instance from Bangladesh about using Zoom for government meetings. But you gotta understand that it was huge, because in Bangladesh, the installed capacity is at a very different level than Korea. So you have to take into account the amount of effort that it's taking to a government to leapfrog to the use of the latest technologies available. So in the end, there was like this discussion on well, what are we actually like recognizing? Is it only innovation and like these futuristic approaches that, of course, it's what we're aiming to? But we should also recognize these efforts that actually have an impact on people's lives. So this is what we are going and what we're doing at the PIT Policy Lab, starting by the Latin American region, specifically working in Mexico, understanding what's our point of departure around these technologies, creating conversations, becoming an umbrella for practitioners to see themselves as public interest technologies, to see themselves as developers, and also as people that are trying to focus and channel their expertise into social good.
Wonderful. It sounds very, very interesting what you're telling, and I hope there's many more people engaging in this, because I guess for all governments around the world, it was a very harsh way to adapt to the new digital reality after the pandemic took in. I have two last questions for you. The first one would be more in the direction of tech policy. You were talking about the regulation of artificial intelligence. Could you give us some concrete examples where you think that artificial intelligence should be regulated, in which areas it more or less, or where you see like more risks for emerging technologies, or how policy can solve the regulation of artificial intelligence? That would be one. And the other one is your impressions on the new Biden administration in terms of tech policy, like how you think the Biden administration is going to change maybe as well the transatlantic relationship with Europe again in this. What's your take on that? That would be very interesting.
Perfect. Actually, I'd like to start by the second question, because I think we are going through very interesting times from a community of practice perspective, from a public interest technology perspective, because I think what's happening, or at least what I see that's happening that really excites me, is that some of the ideas and projects that were put in motion in the Obama administration and that then were put on hold during the Trump administration, I see them like restarting. And I see that many people that went from government, that went from working in government innovation teams and then went to academia, are now coming back. And are like, it's like a reloaded version, because they're not now more aware of what caused these change ambitions. And I think that there's like an interesting self-critique, an understanding that these conversations need to be more inclusive, and that it needs to take into account the reality that people are living, and in the end, that more than 70 million people voted for Trump. So it's not only saying, well, we won and now it's our vision of the world. It has to be an inclusive vision, and it has to be an inclusive government. So what really excites me about what's going on with the Biden-Harris administration, I think, is that it sets the tone back of innovation, of respect, of mutual respect, and that it will place again the United States as an important player in the international field. I think that was completely lost during the Trump administration. It wasn't a priority. It was more focused on a national agenda. And even though the Biden-Harris agenda has a strong focus on national policy, I think it also draws from recovering their spotlight and their role in the world. And well, that personally excites me, because I think there are a lot of opportunities of collaboration, especially between Mexico and the U.S., which are neighbors. We have the USMCA, the Chapter 16. And I think, I see many opportunities of collaboration. I see many opportunities of knowledge exchange not only into adopting best practices from the US, but actually sharing the knowledge that we have created throughout these years and say, like, wait, like, hey, we have these learnings because we worked on these issues that matter to you. There's a increasingly growing Hispanic population in the US. So why not working together and providing solutions that we've already solved and then learning from the innovative things and framework that you're proposing and bringing them back to Mexico. So I see a new era of cooperation. I hope for a new era of cooperation. And that really excites me. Now, going to your first question on AI regulation, I don't think it's an easy conversation. And I don't think there's a set answer to respond like how a country should go about it. I think I think that we have to set into account the importance of AI ethics, of understanding the impact of the potential applications, the impact it can have on people's lives. And I also think, and that's why I stop and emphasize so much on context, because we can see how conversations are going around, for example, facial recognition technologies, how they are going in China, and how they're going in Europe, and for example, in San Francisco with banning it. And then what I think is interesting for us as a region or as a country is understanding, well, how are these conversations playing? Why are they playing so different? To what value they respond? And then to ask ourselves, what are our values and what do we want to prioritize? Because if we want to put people at the center, then we definitely have to rethink the potential harms even before or during the process of the development and creation of technologies. And that's why we emphasize that people is the lab, and it's something that we do within, well, a lot in C-Minds, on the importance of proofs of concept, on understanding that there's no one-size-fits-all policy, that we cannot scale a policy recommendation without first having tested it, without first having understood people. So I definitely think that the first step has to do with creating engaging conversations, with making sure to have inclusive spaces, for safe spaces for having these conversations, and safe, serious spaces so industry, government, academia, civil society can find this middle point to discuss. Because I also think that there's this risk of like working in silos, like working in our own echo chambers with industry having a very strong say about a specific regulation, or even about this idea of self-regulation, but then some governments leaning more towards having a strict regulation, whatever that means, because it has to be defined. And the approach that we were seeing at C-Minds, actually, I led C-Minds here for Good Policy Lab, but there's an other amazing area called ER Resilience Lab that's working on a policy prototyping with Facebook and with the national authority with INAI. I'm having trouble with the translation of the name, but anyway, with national authorities on defining how set rules for startups in the AI ecosystem to actually, okay, how can I put it in simpler words? This prototyping aims to working with startups that are already delivering products or services in AI and developing a set of rules that they have to conform to for a couple of months, and then understanding what happens when they conform to these rules. And these rules are around explainability and transparency, algorithmic explainability and transparency. So I think this is just starting. The startups have been selected. But I think these kind of exercises are very, very important because it's not only a theoretical approach. It's not only saying, like, we believe this has to happen, but then we have information based on a case, based on the work with real organizations of what happens and what actually, and we can create a common understanding of what does algorithmic transparency and algorithmic explainability means in the context of policy, in the context of startups. So I think the right way to approach these regulatory questions is by trying to develop exercises, like experiential learning exercises.
Thank you so much for that. That is indeed very important. And I think this is why it's so important that we need more people like you who are exploring these topics and also looking for solutions. And it's true that it's still the very beginning, but since these technologies will probably have a big impact on the way our societies organize themselves, it's cool that we have people like you studying it. Thank you so much for your time, Christina. We're running out of time. It was a pleasure to have you here. Very interesting conversation. And I hope you come back one day.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed sharing these ideas with you. I look forward to keeping in touch with your audience and with the community. And well, of course, you're also welcome to come to Mexico anytime, to come to Latin America. Nos vemos.
Thank you very much for listening to this conversation. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, please follow us on all relevant podcasting platforms. If you'd like to come on the show, feel free to reach out to us on social media. We will be producing more content with relevant stakeholders from the GovTech ecosystem. Until next time, Simon.